you guys. Welcome back to Listen Bitch Presents Tell Me Why You're Special. This is the arena, you guys. No warm up, no easing in, just the real conversation, the one underneath the resumes, underneath the accolades, underneath the version of the story that sounds good at a big fancy conference. Today's guest has credentials that would make most people's head spin. The kind of educational pedigree and corporate resume that looks like someone did everything right. I'm gonna let him tell his story, because that's the whole point of the show, so you guys don't have to listen to me. So, I just want to say, Philip Blackett, welcome to the hot seat today. I'm so excited to have you here. Thank you for taking the time out to talk to my audience today. So, my first question out the gate for everybody is, it's your elevator pitch. Tell us who you are, what you do, and who you help.
Yeah, no problem. So thanks so much for having me, Brandon. I think the biggest thing for me is I am fresh off of a midlife crisis myself. Basically, Thanksgiving 2024 was my 40th birthday, and I was at the dinner table with my wife and kids, extended family. And to your point earlier, from my introduction, from my resume, from what I've done before, it should be enough on the outside for people to say, "Well, Philip, you got a lot to be grateful for." And quite honestly, I second that. And I would include that's what you see on the outside. And I think the biggest thing for me was on the inside was telling a different story. So for me at that time, I was pretty much burnt out from a business I was running before. I was overweight. I was part of the 300 Club, but not the movie. So definitely not the 300 Club you want to be a part of when you get older. And then I was just really unsure about where I was in life as far as the next direction. Because growing up, I was taught as far as what are the right schools to go for, the right jobs to have. You have all these different expectations to basically try to appease people, people please, that sort of thing. This comes from a recovering people pleaser myself. And in this new change for me, like moving and starting all over or pressing the reset button, I had the question where it's like, all right, what do I do now? And obviously someone's like, "Oh yeah, you planned to do it at 40." He's like, "Well, I was trying to figure out what was the right thing for me to do." And I think for me, I went on a own midlife transformation for myself to get myself in a better place because, to be honest with you, Brandon, I was at a point that was pretty much a dark place for me. And I recognized that if I didn't make the right decision on where I go from here, not only would I be significantly impacted, but also my family. So I needed to make sure I made the right decision on where to go from here, especially being in a really tough place. Once I got through all that, the question went in my head was, okay, like I improved on my energy. I was eating right. I was doing better things, being more active. I was doing all the things that would make me feel better on the inside and the outside. And I can go into more detail what I actually did if you like. But the key thing here, just kind of landing this plane for you in the audience, was I still was trying to figure out where do I go as far as direction? What is my purpose here at this point? The parameters of success for me are a lot different than they were 20 years ago. And the biggest thing was basically figuring out how many other people probably went through something similar, and how can I be a resource for them, helping them through their inevitable moments like I went through.
I think that's incredible. And I just want to say, you guys, Philip is being very humble when he's talking about his success, because I want you guys to see this whole picture of where he was at. Goldman Sachs, FedEx, Bank of America, Chick-fil-A, Harvard MBA, okay? This is stuff that people currently right now are going to spend their entire career chasing. And the message that I want you guys to understand is the fact that even my own experience with working with, women that are making incredible amounts of money, there is an underlying message here that those things on the outside are never really going to connect with what's going on the inside. And just because you're doing all these incredible things and you have, it didn't mean that you had that soul purpose alignment, always looking for that thing and feeling empty. So I think that was a very humble intro, 'cause like you killed it out there. And I want you guys to see like all of those things to meet him at this moment where he is still not feeling fulfilled, and he's having that empty feeling and questioning everything. What's the pattern you see? The outward success, the inward fatigue, declining health, identity tension. You're seeing this pattern. When did you first, like, what was the moment really that you recognized this in yourself? And now you're like, okay, I have to help other people.
So I think for me was just the thought of, I was already thinking to myself, like, okay, in this place I was at, Brandon, it was like, where do I find purpose here in my particular place? Like, okay, I've done success outwardly. I have a family that's sort. But I think, I would bet that for a lot of people that are listening or watching us, we see stories, success stories, where you ask yourself, well, why did that person do this? Well, this person had it all. Why did it make a sudden change for the worse? And I felt like it was really starting in my thoughts. It was really the thoughts. It's like I went through a lot of struggle recently and trying to figure out how do I like make this pain go away? And it really comes off the sense for everyone. It's like when you want pain relief and it hurts bad enough, you're pretty open on what solutions you'd be willing to
Whatever it
take
takes.
to escape, at least escape from it. Maybe not be able to completely get rid of it, but just escape, even just for a moment. Maybe if it's just 10, 20 minutes, maybe it's an hour or a day or longer. And so that for me was when I was starting to have those thoughts and knowing that some of those thoughts or choices are good choices, healthy choices, and some of them weren't. And some of them would have probably harmed myself or my family, both in the short term and the long term. And I think that was for me when I recognized the gravity of what was going on. And even once I got out of it, helped me understand, okay, if I experienced that, other people probably go through a similar experience, maybe not at 40, but somewhere I usually say between 35 to 55 years old in midlife, you go through one of those occasions where you start rethinking things you thought were settled for you. You're now questioning, was everything I was doing, did that make sense? Or was there a better way now? And how do you deal with that recollection of like I realize now it's so different. So I think that was really where it originated.
What did was there a moment, because I mean, you've got a bachelor's in political science and economics, an MBA, a master's of divinity. Like, in that moment, was there any conscious part of you that, because that's not just a hobby thing, right? That's you actively searching for something. You're looking for something. Did you have any clue in those moments, like what it was that you were really looking for and trying to fulfill?
I was trying to find meaning for me at this stage of life. Like I feel like each stage before it had its purpose. And I feel like as humans, if we allow ourselves, different chapters in our life call for different purposes and different reasons or even evolution in terms of, you're growing up and things that used to be important for you back then no longer is the case. Now you're trying to level up on where you can go. And I think for me, that's where even with the schooling and going to work at different places, it was, you're trying new things, things you're interested in. And at the same time, you're also thinking to yourself, I don't know exactly where this is going to pan out, but at least I'm gaining something that even if this isn't it for the long term, this could help position me for what's next.
Ah, that makes sense. So you have this life after 40. Okay, that is a complete statement. And I feel like culture has allowed people to believe that if they aren't successful, if they don't have it figured out by X amount, I mean, I'm even frustrated with the fact that they think my 18-year-old knows what they should spend $100,000 on in college. Okay, like, who makes that kind of decision that I'm almost 50 and I don't know what I want to be when I grow up, right? Like, so to commit to such insane responsibilities and stewardship of when you have no clue, culture, society, everyone. 40s is when you should have already had it figured out. You're winding down, you're chilling out. And I feel like your message is the opposite. So Where does that conviction come from? And have you felt like it's an uphill battle to flip the script?
So I think uphill battle only from how it rests in your mind, right? Because to your point, oftentimes we battle a number of different midlife myths as we get older, one of which would be, hey, like Brandon, it's too late for me to change at this point. Like I've done my life. The best has already happened when I was younger, when I was in college, when I was in early adulthood. Like that's as good as it gets. And now, it might be because like, oh, well, I settled down and got married, or oh, I now have kids, or oh, now my kids just left the house to go to college. I'm an empty nester. Like you're thinking to yourself, like, I'm done. Like this is it. I should just kind of settle down and just resign myself to this is how life is. And I think that should be an alarm bell for anybody, because who told you that that was the way to believe? Who said that that was the way to go about things, where as opposed to just resigning yourself to that, couldn't it be like you can now shift into a different gear? And I think that was a huge thing. Another myth that came up top of mind for me going through this was the whole thought of self-care is selfish. You put yourself out there for so many people, especially as a parent or a spouse or a partner, or when you're at work, you're working for somebody or for yourself. You're oftentimes putting others in front of you because you don't want that notion of, oh my gosh, like I'm being selfish. When on the same token, it's like, but if you're not taking care of yourself, who will, at least consistently? Because we all need to be taken care of on a daily basis, primarily, if we're going to keep going on this whole thing called life. And who's going to know you better than yourself? And so I think those are two of the biggest myths that come up that, like I said before, one way of thinking about after 40 is a sense of resignation. Look, I've done my duty. I have my fun. It's almost like I'm going to retire before I actually retire, or I just settle for the routine. This is as good as it gets, as mundane or boring as it is. Hey, this is it. Another way of looking at it, and this is where I tend to go, is you've got 40 years of lived experience. Each day is a new day for you. Some people that were living yesterday didn't make it to today. So you already have a gift bestowed upon you just by waking up. And the question becomes, what do you want to do with today? Given all that you went through, all the skills you learned, all the experiences you've had, I think you're much more experienced and skilled at what you are at now, like near 50, than you are at 25. Would you argue that you're in a better place? You're more skilled, you're more wiser, you're much more equipped to do big things now compared to before? Well, if that's the case, why don't we actually make good on that? Let's see what we can actually make out of this day by day.
I don't think ever in my experience of reading the Bible, and this is my third year going through it, never have I read where God is like, hey, when you hit about 40, you're cool, you're off the hook. Like, no, we were called to create and to steward potential through him, and there's no time limit on that. So, age has never mattered when it comes to what's going to happen, and I think people don't realize like that long game of you giving up now or you using these excuses now. It's that same thing of like self-care. You have to know who you are outside of being a mom. Being a mom is who I've been for 23 years. It's all I know. It's what defined everything about me. So I had to find a place of like, who am I going to be when, my youngest is 7, I still have time. But like, who am I going to be when she leaves? Right. So it's a matter of like finding myself again. Like, what do I like? Not what I do to serve everybody else, but like, what is my calling? What is my potential? And really focusing on that of like, who am I going to be and what can I steward when, my daily hands-on mom mission is over. I'm not making lunches every day anymore. I'm not doing the things, and I think people really just kind of get lost in that. And then they're just kind of stuck. Well, like, this is just what it is. It's what I chose. I was a mom, and now I'm just, waiting till we die. Like that's, you take so much for granted. And I love how you are blending science and the lived experience and that wisdom in places that, you're bringing faith into a conversation and it's a deliberate choice. I love that. So what does faith, because I feel like it doesn't matter who you are or what you do, because if you do not have that foundation of Christ, you're kind of screwed. Like you're done. Like it just everything crumbles. It's there's that's I've learned that from experience. Nothing has a foundation without him. So what does faith add to that midlife conversation that science and strategy alone are just not going to do it for people?
So, like, this is a topic that can be an episode in of itself.
Oh, of course.
Because, when I went through my midlife crisis, when you're having those tough questions, I tend to believe that, okay, those thoughts just didn't come randomly.
Right.
It's probably one of three places for me of where those thoughts are coming from. It's either just me just trying to figure it out in my own fallible, imperfect, sinful nature, or it's coming from a higher nature as
Yeah.
far as God is concerned, or a more lower, more evil oriented, more
Yeah.
perverted nature, right? And I think that when I was having those thoughts, what helped me was, first off, like I said before, I had to make the right decision as far as to keep going. And a song that I was taught early on in church from my grandmother was "Because He Lives." And the lyric basically was, "Because He lives, Jesus, because He lives, I can face tomorrow." And as that song played out and I played it over and over again, I came to the realization, which is a core belief of mine now at life after 40, is that midlife is worth living and worth living well. So the thought is like, if I can first, step one, determine for myself that midlife is worth me living, to keep going, to keep progressing, even when it's tough, to not give up, not throw in the towel, not just say, hey, I'm just going to quit on life.
Yeah.
That in itself is a win, a huge win. Obviously, in this sense, it's based on something bigger than myself. And if you don't have a sense as far as where you are in this grand scheme of things, as far as where this world is and how it was created, I personally believe that I am a child of God. I'm God's son. He loves me enough that he gave his only begotten son to rescue me from evil, from sin. And that means I was worth something to him. If I was worth something to him, then that should let me know that I'm worth continuing to live. And I shouldn't eject myself from this privilege or responsibility to say, hey, I'm still here. There must be a reason. Let me see about how I can bring out my God-given mission. And then from there, once you say it's worth living well, then let me take what I have as my time, the oxygen I'm breathing, the body I have, the one place I have to live, how do I treat it well? Because this is the only thing I got, and make the best out of it for the time I have left. And so that all is embedded in faith for me, believing that there is a reason that I went through what I went through. There's a reason why the mess I went through can be my message today, or my test that I went through before can be my testimony today. And so I think, to your point, Bram, one of the things that people have to realize when you go through these moments, you ask yourself these tough questions that you can't just solve in a Facebook comment somewhere. You can't even really get the full truth on it by trying to prompt your way into it using AI. This is something that is more so understanding you as a spirit, spiritually speaking. Where do you all relate to this? And for me, it's in relation to my Heavenly Father. And for those that are not on that same wavelength as me, or have that same biblical worldview as me, I would hope and pray that you do learn what that is about,
Check it out.
because that's only going to be helpful for you. And so I think for me, that was very helpful to get me grounded with the right perspective and say, hey, I'm a steward of my wife and kids. I know I'm going to be responsible for that when my time comes. And so I need to do my best to take care of them for the time I'm here. So that means I need to be my best version of myself, self-care, to be able to care for the people I love, my family, and embark on my new mission in life as far as what God has for me now, which is life after 40.
I love that. And Philip, I just want to make it clear because this is a big takeaway that I want the audience to have, not just your entire story, but there is a moment, and I'm going to say this, whether you believe it or not, you listening, you mean something to God, and not just something, you mean everything. And everything he's ever orchestrated, everything that's ever come, everything before you, everything now in this moment was to bring you here to this space. And maybe it's just a reminder to tell you how much you matter to him. But if you are feeling so lost right now, I'm just saying in this moment, like give that a chance. Be open to the idea that you are not just something to him, you're everything to him. You intentionally, like everything he's done before you was for you. Everything. And that love is just immeasurable. So in that moment, I Philip very much agree that, you know, finding that purpose in knowing who you are, like that is our identity. That is our identity. We're a child of the King. And I think rooting in that shifts perspectives for everything. And you're a married father of twin daughters. So, how has fatherhood, specifically raising daughters, I've had boys and girls, and they're both very different experiences of parenthood. But how does this shape the work you do and the man that you're becoming?
So it's really pivotal, Brandon, from the standpoint that, and this gets back to my faith as well, I was entrusted by God with the women in my house to be a provider, to be a protector, to be a pastor. All of what I went through was not for shame or for vain. Like, even going to seminary is like, I look at my family as my first ministry. Beyond what I do, beyond outside of the household, like that is what I care for the most. I look at it from the standpoint of, with my wife, we'll be celebrating 10 years being married later on in a couple months. I look at it from the sense of not only did God bless me with her, that helped me through both the good and the bad moments over the past 10 years, but her father entrusted me with his daughter. And I should have enough respect and care for and love for that man as well to make sure that he knows that his daughter's in good hands. And in the same vein, with my twin daughters, the key relationship they're going to have as far as what it's like to be with a man is going to be predicated primarily on their relationship with their father. Day to day, 18 years and ongoing, even when they're out of the house. And we live in a world today that can be very dangerous for young women, that for a lot of them, they seek protection from the evils that are out there. And I want my girls to always know that they have a safe
They have a
space
safe
here with
space.
dad and someone that will be honest with them. I basically have two things that I care the most about in imparting for them, which is the same thing that generationally was passed by my grandmother. I want you to have a relationship with Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. And I want you to do your very best when it comes to education and explore what's right for you, what God has for you. And to me, the thought is with my family there, that is also part of that purpose post 40 for me. And recognizing, okay, I didn't just like, oh, I got a ring, I'm married, or oh, the kids are born. Like, I could check that box. It's like, no. Part of the mission also is you're embarking on raising two human beings trusted by God to do that job. I know it gets mundane sometimes. I know it gets boring. I know it gets hectic. I know it gets annoying, all across the board. But if you just take a moment just to step out of that and recognize one, how crucial that is. You're shaping another human being and how they look at the world once they leave your household when it's time for college and beyond. But it's also one is like their relationship with other human beings is going to be based off how my relationship is with my mother, how my relationship is with my dad. I don't want my kids to have mommy issues. I don't want my kids to have daddy issues. The only way we can really make sure that that's not a reality for them is how do we take the time that we have left with them and how we treat them, how we raise them, how we love them. Because the other part of it too is my kids will be 9 next week. I look at this, Brandon, that we're reaching halftime. 9 years in, got nine more, not another more 9 years to go. And essentially what goes on there is I got 9 more summers with them. They're twins. They're born the same day. 9 more birthdays after this. We're going to go through the rest of elementary school, middle school, and high school, and that's it. You only got 9 more springs, 9 more Christmases, 9 more spring breaks, 9 more summer vacations. And I think that's also a great reminder, too, that when they say the days are long and the years are short, there's truth to that. Because I can't go back to where the kids were in diapers and high chairs. Like, that's gone. I'm glad I took pictures and videos. That's the only way I can relive it outside of memory. So the other part is really understanding with the time we have left, I can't tell you how much more time I have here. How do I become a good and faithful steward of the time I have left, both with myself, with my family as my first ministry, and then my ministry beyond my first ministry going forward?
I think that's beautiful. And I know you spoke too. I have a lot of moms listening, and we all kind of know that experience. And I love that you have this figured out. And for those of you listening that are like me and struggled in the beginning years as a parent, I have 6 kids, made terrible mistakes with my first 2 oldest. And I just want you guys to understand, number one, it doesn't mean that's where you stay. Like, breaking generational curses is not a one-time thing. It's very, it's not black and white. It takes time. So I say continue to steward your mission and become the best version of you, and everything works out. So and that, I think, something that really helped me as the kids got older as well is just to remind myself, like, these aren't my babies. Like, these are God's babies. And so that process of letting them go and letting them grow has been the hardest thing. Like, my 23, well, she moved out when she was 22, and I mean, I thought it was the end of the world, right? I'm like, she's been with me every single day since she was 20, since she was a baby. Like, what am I gonna do? I took it really hard, and now my third oldest is about to, he's enlisting in the Marines, and just all of that, you guys, is such a season and such a process, and we can't go back, but you can make the best of every moment from here on out, and just remember through every season that you're in, because some of them are really hard, but those are God's babies, and you were just blessed with getting to steward some of their experience here. But I think this is incredible. Those girls are very, very fortunate to have you, and God bless your family. Like, you are incredible in your stewardship with that. You wrote a book for me. I feel like it's specifically for me, okay? Because, and the whole world, people listening right now are going to agree. It's called Disagree Without Disrespect. And this is about debating people who think, believe, and vote differently than you do. I've been in it in some Christian spaces here. And I would say my heart gets kind of hardened in a lot of topics because I will never understand. But that the title alone is countercultural right now. I love that. I want to know what made you write the book, and what did writing it cost you?
So, I'll be 100% honest with you. I created that book for me too. I come from a family that is very outspoken, can be very passionate about certain things. We don't always agree on everything, and we're very clear to let you know about that. And so I think for me, it got to a point where it's like, I'm kind of tired of having these arguments every Thanksgiving holiday. Like I don't want to think twice before I call a family member now. I still do sometimes, but the intention is I don't want to, right? And part of it is because understanding is like, listen, here's the God honest truth, Brandon. God made us all different. How we look, what we think, what's important to us. For some people, we can look at that and appreciate that diversity as part of God's creation. I also would say there is a God of this world, which is different, that hinges off of division and what that division can mean in terms of taking those same differences, making people very tribal to the point of potentially being violent towards one another. And so I think with the book in particular, Disagree Without Disrespect, the focus is, listen, let's just all agree on one thing. I promise you, if I spend enough time with Brandon, we're going to find things which I feel like we already have in this conversation that we wholeheartedly agree with. I also would say, if we spend enough time together, we'll find some things that we see differently on.
Absolutely.
And that's okay. And the thought is that if I feel that way towards you, what's to say that we can't feel that way towards one another? And it's about trying to figure out the truth of this is that with everyone, we can find something of agreement, some common ground with if we take the time to keep our eyes open for it. And at the same time, how do we navigate the differences without calling each other out of our names or getting violent or unfriending or canceling one another? But unfortunately, we have a culture today, media included, that it lives off of that division, that disagreement, that rudeness, that I'm going to call you out in the comments, and the beef between one another, and unfortunately, it has people think that that's the way it has to go. Where I remember growing up, part of the motivation behind the book was I saw two lawyers fight vigorously against one another in court. And after the court case, both lawyers looked at each other afterwards outside the courtroom, shook hands, and they had lunch together. Different sides of the aisle was able to argue the points. Somebody won, somebody didn't. They weren't poor sports about it, weren't sore losers or sore winners, shook hands, said, good case. And they were able to build a relationship afterwards, which could have been not just lunch, but could have also involved like sending holiday greetings to the family or catching up together for one soccer game for a kid. And I think the notion becomes it is possible to disagree with someone and yet still respect and love that person. And that's really the core message. How do we go about it where we can respectfully disagree and still cherish the relationship we're building with somebody out of love and respect for that person?
I love that. And I think, I mean, I definitely need that. It's not even a politics issue anymore. It's morality. It's morals, and it's things that I know to be true. And there's a part of me that continues to take it personal when my morals are my morals, whether you choose or not. And I think it's just that, I almost get frustrated. I'm like, listen, I spent a lot of time without knowing how good God is. I don't want you to waste another second like I did. And there's this like almost desperate, frantic feeling of like, you just have to know He is real and this is the truth. Like, know that right now. And I just want to shake everybody until they get it. You know what I mean? Like, just understand. And it's just God's working on me. He's stretching me through the show because I do meet a lot of people that absolutely don't align with my values and morals, and they still have a great conversation. And I learn something new in every episode. And this show is no exception because your book is amazing. That's another whisper from God to be like, look, I'm really still trying to grow something in you. And the truth is, we can't be the light if we're going to shut down in darkness to everybody that we don't agree with, you know, or it's not on me to decide who makes it in the end. It's just my job to be able to tell people, like, listen, this is real, and like his law is real, and what he thinks about humanity and people, like, that's real. And that understanding of, like, he wrote the Bible for everybody in this space, every human that walks the earth. Like, he did that intentionally for them. They were here to create for good. And whether or not they chose that's not my business. Whether or not they steward that can't be my life's work. All I can do is continue. And people like you remind me of that. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you for the book. I'm definitely checking it out because my heart has been hardened and I feel that. And I'm not trying to be the Pharaoh. You know what I mean? Like, I get
Oh.
it. The message is coming through. Like, it, and it is, I mean, people are so beautiful. And when I start collecting these stories and having conversations with people like you, Philip, I'm just like, wow, you know, how many people have I shut off in the past year that, you know, needed to see me continue to become the light? Because it's just that planted seed, you know? So anyway, a little bit of regret there, but you know, we're a work
Oh,
in
it's okay.
progress. We're never
If I
gonna
could add
make it.
something real quick on that.
Yeah.
So I do remember in the Bible it talked about where, someone plants a seed,
Okay.
someone waters, and then God takes it from
Plants
there.
it.
We all have a purpose in what we do. It may be to plant a seed, it may be to water, it may be to pray for someone, it may be to do some act of kindness they weren't expecting during a time of need. When you do kindness. I do remember it says in the Bible too, like, reaping coals on somebody that's done wrong for you. Like, I remember that when I was in college and somebody cheated on me, and then I was like still nice to them, and they felt very regretful after. So, why would you do this? I did this wrong thing. It's like, it's not me. My human nature would not want to do this. I submitted myself to something greater. Maybe you should find out about it. But in that same sense too, Brandon, I think that that's part of us being God's ambassadors, where He knows everything. We may not know exactly all that's going on with that person when we interact with that person, but if we just do our part, and oftentimes I say this in the book too, it's not about winning the argument all the time. Sometimes it could be just how you engage with somebody, and the win might be, I was expecting to chomp my head off, Brandon. But you were actually trying to listen and actually understand the story behind why I look at the law differently than you. And that at least opens me up to say, hey, can we talk about this again, maybe over lunch? Share with me your perspective. Why is this Jesus guy so important to you? And I think that oftentimes how we go about interaction is more important than what we actually say, because it's either going to open somebody up to learn more and engage more, that we can minister to that person, or it closes them off and says, oh, yep, I knew it. They're all the same.
I spread a little bit of seed about they're all the same, you guys, and I apologize again. It's fine. We're work in progress again.
Absolutely.
I have my last question for you because we actually are over time, and I love that because I get so lost in these conversations. I have a goal and it doesn't always get met. But there is someone listening right now, Philip, who is, I don't know, 42, 48, 55. They do everything they're supposed to do. They've got the degrees, the career, the money, the family, the faith, and they're quietly exhausted and they do not know who they are outside of these achievements. What are you going to say to that person and how? What are you going to say to that person?
I'll say to that person the same thing my grandmother shared with me in that song. Because he lives, I can face tomorrow. Because oftentimes we get to a point, I think even in the book of, I believe it's Ecclesiastes, when Solomon was like, all this is for vain. I think he had his moment. I think he had his midlife crisis. It was just like, all this wealth I amass, all this
It's
fill in the
nothing.
blank that I have here, what is the use of it? You reach a point where you ask yourself the tough questions. And I think, to your point, Brandon, I think as we get older, I was sharing this with somebody earlier, my relationship with God's word has grown over time as I've gotten older. Because now I look at it from a lens of me being in midlife versus when I was in a Sunday school class. And what goes on to me is just how we go about growing up. And I would venture for someone to say, hey, listen, if it's been a while since you've been around God's word, open it up again. A lot of the characters you'll see in the Bible, for example, they had those moments where they questioned, they doubted. They thought they couldn't do it because they were less than. They thought they couldn't do it because they were too young. They thought they couldn't do it because they were too old. But for a lot of those people, there was something within them that was greater than themselves. And so when you're asking yourself those type of tough questions, it's probably helpful for you to go into this not just by yourself, but also with somebody. And he very much cares about you, as Brandon said before. You mean the world to him. And he just wants you to open up and allow him to love you and to guide you in the right direction as you navigate this moment. And honestly, I haven't regretted one bit. So I would recommend it to the fullest from my standpoint. And just trust him, trust God on this one.
Amen to that. Philip, where can people find you and get resourced with you?
Sure. So to learn more about Life After 40, you can head on over to our website at lifeafter40.com. And to learn more about me and how we can potentially work together, how I can help you and my ministry in particular, go to my personal website at philipblackett.com.
Perfect. Well, Philip, this is the part of the show where I get to tell you what I think makes you special. Obviously, it's not Harvard, it's not the 25 books that you've written, which that's an incredible feat that we didn't even talk about, okay? It's not the Forbes feature, although all of that is real. It does matter. The accomplishments are beautiful. But I think really at your core, what makes you special is that you looked at a room full of high achievers and insisted, instead of, celebrating what they built, you ask them, what is it costing them? And you ask yourself this question first. You ask the question most people in your position never stop long enough to ask. They go with it until, they can't. And you built something to answer the question. The fact that you have all of these degrees, that you are bringing faith into a space where most people leave it at the door because it's bad for business. That tells me that you're not building just a wellness platform. You're doing something more whole than that. You are helping people integrate the parts of themselves that the achievement culture told them to keep separate. We're always told, keep God out of it. This is business. This is a gift that goes way beyond any metric you could ever put in a press release or on a sheet of accomplishments. It's beautiful and it's incredible, and I see that and I honor your journey. God bless you for that. And I want to thank you so much for being here. Thank you for doing the work, not just on yourself, but so you could steward this with other people. I think you're an incredible gift in this space, and I know that you have a lot of people to impact. To everyone listening, you guys, the show exists for you. The you that is high functioning and quietly running on empty, the you that hit 40 or 50 and realized the map that you've been following was literally drawn by someone else, the you that has the faith and the success and the life that looks right, but you're still wondering what's missing. Your mess is your message. And sometimes the mess is not a dramatic collapse. Sometimes it's just the quiet, present feeling that you were built for more. And the grind that you're currently in, that feeling is not ingratitude. That is your soul, your spiritual side trying to get your attention. So stop ignoring it. Go find Philip. I've got links in the show notes. Check out Life After 40. If you are in the second half of life and ready to stop just maintaining and actually start thriving physically, emotionally, relationally, spiritually, he is someone you need in your corner. Everything in the show notes, okay? And make sure you share out this episode because there is someone that needs to hear his voice that I could never reach without your help, okay? I love the stars. Like, those are cute for the review, but really, what's going to help more people get in the show is if you leave a written review, okay? So please get resourced, subscribe to the show so you don't miss another episode. And then, I'm going to be in this arena all week, every week, for anyone who is ready to tell the truth about where they've been, what it costs, and who they're becoming. I appreciate you guys so much for tuning in. I appreciate you, Philip, and you guys, I'll see you in the arena.
Thank you so much.